Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Diabetes Newsletter. This is Sue Madison, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader and host of the Diabetes Newsletter. The Diabetes Newsletter features practical, current, and timely articles found in the Diabetes Forecast, Diabetes Self-Management, and Diabetic Living magazines, plus other magazines and internet articles to help you manage diabetes. Today, we'll start with an article titled Heart Healthy Plus Wise for American Heart Month. Take a deep dive into the who, what, and why of the heart from Diabetes Forecast Magazine, January-February 2020. Also, I'll read an article titled Food Myths, Debunking 5 Common Claims from Diabetes Self-Management Magazine, January 30th, 2020. Also, an article titled Type 2 Drug Victoza Being Studied as Alzheimer's Treatment from Diabetes Self-Management Magazine, January 29th, 2020. Also, Living Well, 7 Self-Care Strategies for Managing Diabetes This Winter, January-February 2020, Diabetes Forecast Magazine. Another article titled Back to Basics, Beginner's Guide to Carbohydrate Counting from the January-February 2020 Diabetes Forecast Magazine. Also, a short article titled Meyer Ends Free Medication Program from Diabetes Self-Management Magazine, February 7th, 2020. I will also read other interesting items and articles as time allows. Thank you for joining me. And here is our first article titled Heart Healthy Plus Wise. For American Heart Month, take a deep dive into the who, what, and why of the heart by Benjamin Page in the Diabetes Forecast Magazine, January-February 2020. For most of us, the heart is our childhood introduction to anatomy. Understanding its importance, we cross our hearts to pledge promises and make cute, though anatomically incorrect, drawings as gifts on Valentine's Day. But this early knowledge of the heart does not always carry over into adulthood. Cardiovascular disease remains the number one cause of death in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, shortened to CDC, accounting for nearly 1 in 4 deaths annually. For people with diabetes, the chance of dying from heart disease doubles. Knowing how the heart works is an important part of reducing heart disease deaths. February is American Heart Month, so we are breaking down everything you need to know about this vital organ. The heart of the matter. At its most basic, the heart supplies blood throughout the body. Our brain, kidneys, muscles, everything requires a steady supply of oxygenated blood in order to function. But accomplishing that simple goal is more complicated than you might think. The way I like to distill it down for patients is that the heart has 3 systems, says Luke Laffin, MD, a preventive cardiologist at the Cleveland Clinic: pump, rhythm, and plumbing. Diabetes can affect all of these. Most of us are familiar with the pumping function, the mechanism by which the heart's 4 chambers move blood. This is what you feel when you put your hand to your chest. Blood from the body flows into the right atrium and is then pumped into the right ventricle. That pumps blood to the lungs, where it picks up oxygen. Once blood has gone through the lungs, it returns to the heart, moving through the left atrium and left ventricle before being pumped out to the rest of the body. Rhythm refers to your heart's electrical system. This tells your heart how many times to pump per minute. Ideally, that is 60 to 100 when at rest. Electrical signals also ensure that the four chambers of your heart are working in conjunction. Then there's the plumbing, the arteries and veins that the blood moves through to reach your organs and muscles. These systems work in concert, sending blood to the lungs to collect oxygen, delivering that enriched blood to the body, and returning the deoxygenated blood back to the lungs to prepare for its next delivery. When we talk about heart health, all of these symptoms are part of the conversation. Is your heart at risk? If something goes wrong with any one of these complex systems, it is called cardiovascular disease, or CVD, though it's commonly referred to simply as heart disease. Beneath the umbrella of CVD, there are several conditions including coronary artery disease, heart attack, stroke, and peripheral artery disease. And here is a list of the types of CVD. These conditions fall under the umbrella of cardiovascular disease. First condition, arrhythmia, also called an irregular heartbeat. This is a problem with the rhythm of the heartbeat, whether irregular, too fast, or too slow. People with diabetes have an increased risk. Another condition is called cardiac arrest, a term for when the heart stops. It's often fatal. Another term, congestive heart failure, a progressive condition in which the heart begins to pump inefficiently due to one or more causes. As many as 50% of people with type 2 diabetes may develop heart failure. Another term, coronary artery disease. The most common type of CVD and the most common for people with diabetes. It results from blockages of the arteries that supply oxygen to the heart, usually from the buildup of fatty deposits called plaque. It can lead to a heart attack. Which brings us to another term, heart attack. When an artery supplying blood to the heart becomes blocked, a myocardial infarction or heart attack can occur. This happens when plaque in the arteries suddenly ruptures, causing a blood clot that prevents blood from moving to the heart. Another term, peripheral artery disease, shortened to PAD. This is a circulatory problem involving the narrowing of arteries that send blood through the legs, stomach, arms, and head. People with diabetes are at a higher risk for developing atherosclerosis, a buildup of plaque in the arteries, the most common cause of PAD. And the last term I'll describe is stroke. There are two kinds of strokes, but the most common, known as an ischemic stroke, occurs when blood is blocked from reaching part of the brain. No matter the type of CVD, all share similar risk factors. Two of the biggest, when combined, can cause major problems. High blood pressure and high cholesterol conspire to increase the risk of coronary artery disease, says Micah Eimer, MD, a cardiologist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago, part of Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Cholesterol is a blood fat or lipid that is important for creating healthy cells, but if your body has too much, it begins to accumulate on the walls of your arteries. This narrows and obstructs your arteries, making it more difficult for blood to pass through. But not all cholesterol is created equal. LDL, or low-density lipoprotein, can easily accumulate and is the main source of these blocks, says Om Gonda, MD, medical director of the lipid clinic at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. So we always talk about keeping LDL cholesterol as low as we can. On the other hand, high-density lipoprotein, HDL cholesterol, is good for you. It clears your arteries by removing excess cholesterol, preventing blockages, and helping your blood flow smoothly. The higher the HDL, the lower the risk of heart disease, Gonda says. He also points to triglycerides, another type of lipid that should be kept low to reduce your risk of blockage. For people with diabetes, especially those with type 2, insulin resistance can lead to high LDL cholesterol and triglycerides and low HDL cholesterol. According to the 2020 Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes from the American Diabetes Association, shortened to ADA, keeping a blood glucose level in a healthy range can help improve your overall cholesterol, especially if you have high triglycerides. High blood pressure or hypertension is another major risk factor for the development of CVD. High blood pressure exerts a negative effect on the heart by increasing the work that the heart has to do to circulate the blood, Eimer says. This can result in thickening of the heart muscle, enlargement of the heart, and eventually an inability of the heart to pump blood effectively. These conditions can lead to coronary artery disease or heart failure over time. But high blood pressure, high LDL cholesterol, and high triglycerides combined can also present more immediate dangers. A blockage formed by high cholesterol is usually unstable, Gonda says. If blood pressure is high, the block is more likely to rupture and cause blood clots, leading to heart attack or stroke. The diabetes factor. There is a connection between CVD and diabetes, and it is significant. Patients with diabetes are essentially treated as if they already have heart disease, says Michelle Kittleson, MD, a cardiologist in the Smidt Heart Institute at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. According to the CDC, an adult with diabetes is hospitalized with cardiovascular disease every 80 seconds in the United States. And an American adult with diabetes is hospitalized for stroke every 2 minutes. The risk is so high, we treat them aggressively for prevention measures, she says. Even when their blood glucose is within goal range, people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes have a greater chance of developing CVD. Their increased likelihood of heart disease risk factors, such as high blood pressure and high cholesterol, plays a role, as does chronic inflammation, which can be an initial cause of artery damage. All of this is compounded if a person is overweight. People with type 1 may have symptoms of heart problems at an earlier age because they have likely lived with diabetes longer. If you see a person with type 1 diabetes who complains of chest discomfort, then you have a high index of suspicion that they may have coronary artery disease, Kittleson says. Elevated blood glucose, which can damage the blood vessels over time, also adds to the risk. Keeping blood glucose in goal range can help protect the heart. The better the diabetes is controlled, the happier we, meaning cardiologists, are that the patient is doing everything possible to minimize it as a risk factor, Kittleson says. Still, the greatest risk factor is one that eventually affects all of us, aging. When you age, says Gonda, your heart muscles can become weak and your blood vessels can develop deposits from cholesterol. The gender divide. Men and women experience cardiovascular disease slightly differently. Scientists are not entirely sure why, but estrogen helps protect the heart in premenopausal women by causing more favorable cholesterol profiles, lowering blood pressure, and reducing inflammation. But this is not necessarily the case for women with diabetes. Diabetes affects both genders equally, Gonda says. Normally, estrogen protects women. But if you have diabetes, the estrogen protection is lost, starting even before menopause. Gender bias also plays a role. CVD is the leading cause of death for both women and men. But assumptions about men being at greater risk mean that women are often under or misdiagnosed. Women sometimes tend to have less classic symptoms, Kittleson says. The crushing chest pain that we all think about as a classic sign of heart disease, women may get less. They may have more non-specific symptoms, like fatigue or nausea. Women should tell their doctors if they are experiencing non-traditional symptoms of heart disease, especially if they have other risk factors. A heart-healthy life. A diabetes-friendly lifestyle goes hand in hand with heart health. Lifestyle changes, such as losing weight, eating healthy, and getting regular exercise, combined with medications to treat blood glucose levels, reduce the risk of heart problems, says Andrew Calvin, MD, a cardiologist with the Mayo Clinic Health System. Exercise is one of the best ways to prevent heart disease. It improves blood pressure, lowers LDL cholesterol, raises HDL cholesterol, and helps manage diabetes and related complications. Regular exercise will also help your cardiologist get a better sense of your heart health. If I know that you are exercising at a reasonable level and not having any symptoms, then everything is going well. It is a daily stress test, Eimer says. On the other hand, if you are exercising and you're having symptoms, that is an early warning sign that we may need to look into something. The Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes recommends at least 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous intensity aerobic exercise each week, 2 to 3 strength training sessions per week, and 2 to 3 sessions a week dedicated to flexibility and balance exercises. When it comes to food, fresh is best. Kittleson tells her patients to avoid packaged foods. Focus on whole foods, whether that's meats, grains, fruits, or vegetables, and you're already winning the game, she says. Studies have linked a Mediterranean-style eating plan, which limits red meat and emphasizes fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, healthy fats, and fish, to better blood glucose management and a reduced risk of CVD. The fiber in foods, such as fruits, vegetables, legumes, and nuts, can help improve cholesterol levels. And the omega-3 fatty acids in fish, such as trout and salmon, reduce the type of inflammation that can lead to heart problems, help lower cholesterol and triglyceride levels, and have been linked to a lower risk for heart disease. A reduced salt diet can help prevent or treat high blood pressure. Cholesterol-lowering statin medications may make a difference, even if you do not have heart disease. The Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes recommends that people with diabetes who do not have CVD take a moderate-intensity statin medication beginning at age 40. If you are a smoker, quit. Not only does smoking shorten your life and worsen blood glucose management, but it also raises your risk of CVD. Nearly a third of all deaths from coronary artery disease are due to smoking and secondhand smoke, according to the American Heart Association. Smoking increases the risk of everything bad and causes nothing good, Kittleson says. Of course, lifestyle changes alone aren't always enough. Medication may be necessary to help lower cholesterol and manage blood pressure. Treating the heart. Maintaining healthy blood glucose, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels is key for preventing heart problems, and it is an important aspect of managing diagnosed cardiovascular disease, too. If you have been diagnosed with heart disease, your doctor may prescribe a medication to treat your specific condition. There are a range of medications for treating heart failure, for instance, including ACE inhibitors and beta blockers. Aspirin is a common treatment for people who have had a heart attack or stroke. And the Standards of Medical Care in Diabetes recommend statin therapy for people with diabetes who have CVD or who have a high risk of CVD. Your doctor may also adjust your diabetes medication. Research has found that glucose-lowering drugs in the SGLT2 inhibitor or GLP-1 receptor agonist classes may also protect the heart in people with type 2 diabetes and diagnosed CVD. Both of these classes are increasingly being used by primary care physicians and endocrinologists in patients with diabetes to protect the heart on top of medicine like metformin, Laffin says. Some cases may also call for surgical intervention. A study published in 2018 in the European Heart Journal found that type 2 diabetes increases the need for a pacemaker, a device that helps regulate erratic heartbeats. For those with artery disease, stent procedures can be performed to open blocked arteries, while bypass surgeries reroute blood flow around a blocked artery. Even after surgery, steps should be taken to lower blood pressure, LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. Get screened early. Many people do not start thinking about heart health until middle age, but it is never too early to start, especially if you have diabetes. People should know their numbers, Laffin says. Know your body mass index, or BMI, which is a ratio of weight to height used to estimate how close a person is to a healthy weight. Blood sugar and blood pressure. Those are all important and generally done by primary care doctors. If these numbers put you at a higher risk, your primary care doctor can perform a more detailed assessment and, if necessary, refer you to a cardiologist. I see patients between their 20s and 60s, Eimer says. The earlier the better, because if there is a problem, it gives us an opportunity to change the course of the disease. This is especially true for people with type 1 diabetes who have generally lived with diabetes longer and had more time for high blood glucose to affect the heart. If you have diabetes, you will want to have your blood pressure measured at every healthcare appointment. Blood pressure targets are individualized, but in general, the ADA recommends a target of less than 140 over 90 millimeters of mercury. The ADA recommends a cholesterol test at a time of a diabetes diagnosis and at least every 5 years thereafter. Your doctor may request more frequent checks based on how long you have had diabetes. Aim for an LDL level of less than 100 milligrams per deciliter, though your doctor may recommend a target of less than 70 milligrams per deciliter if you already have CVD or have a high risk. I will finish this article after our short break. You are listening to the Diabetes Newsletter. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Sue Madison. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been serving listeners for 40 years. Keep listening for more articles and information about how to manage diabetes. And now back to finish the article titled Heart Healthy Plus Wise. For American Heart Month, take a deep dive into the who, what, and why of the heart by Benjamin Page, Diabetes Forecast Magazine, January-February 2020. Call 911 immediately if you notice any signs of a heart attack or stroke. Here are the heart attack symptoms. A squeezing pain or pressure in the chest that lasts more than a few minutes. Pain or discomfort in one or both arms, neck, jaw, or stomach. Fatigue or nausea, especially in women. Sudden shortness of breath. Sudden sweating or lightheadedness. And here are stroke symptoms to watch for. Sudden numbness of the face, arm, leg, especially on one side of the body. Sudden confusion or slurred speech. Sudden trouble seeing or walking. Sudden severe headache. Know diabetes by heart. Learn more about the connection between diabetes and heart health at the website knowdiabetesbyheart.org. This joint initiative of the American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association aims to reduce cardiovascular death, heart attack, stroke, and heart failure in people with type 2 diabetes. find resources for living a healthful life, learn how to prevent heart problems, test your diabetes know-how, and sign up to get more information. Our next article is titled, Food Myths, Debunking 5 Common Claims, by Amy Campbell, published January 30th, 2020, in the Diabetes Self-Management Magazine online. Nutrition and food are hot topics, with everyone from celebrities to athletes weighing in on what is good and bad for you. It can be hard to separate food fact from fiction, and frankly, it gets tiring trying to figure out what to eat, especially with a chronic condition like diabetes. Let us clear up some of the confusion. 5 Common Food Myths Debunked. Food myth number 1. Drink 8 cups of water every day. Water is essential for survival. All of your cells, tissues, and organs depend on water in order to do their jobs, which include regulating body temperature, eliminating waste, lubricating and cushioning joints, and aiding digestion. And water makes up about 60% of your body weight. So while we all definitely need to drink water, there's no scientific basis for drinking 8 cups daily. That might be the right amount for you, but some people will need more water and some will need less. A good place to start is by following the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine recommendations for daily fluid intake. 15.5 cups fluid for men and 11.5 cups fluid for women. The bottom line, you may need more water if you are an avid exerciser, living in a hot and/or humid climate, are pregnant or breastfeeding, or are ill, say with a fever or diarrhea. Also, water is the best beverage choice, but other fluids count as well, including tea, coffee, milk, and soda. And fruits and vegetables contribute to our fluids needs too. Food myths number 2. Supplement your diet with protein powder. The popularity of low-carb, keto, paleo, and plant-based diets has spurred an awareness and even somewhat of a fanatical interest in consuming higher amounts of protein. In addition, some fitness experts and athletes promote the use of protein supplements, often in the form of powders, to build muscle mass and improve performance. As a result, protein has never been more popular. How do you get more protein? Using a protein powder is one way. There are a number of different types of protein powders on the market. The protein source may come from plants such as rice, hemp, soy or peas, milk or egg. Protein powders may contain other ingredients as well, including vitamins and minerals. Some protein powders contain carbohydrate, while others are pure protein. Protein powders and supplements can be helpful for some people, including those who have problems with eating or have a diminished appetite, have had recent surgery, a wound that is not healing, or severe burns, or are older and are losing muscle mass. Some evidence points to a higher protein intake being helpful for weight management, and individuals with diabetes may find that more protein and less carb helps with blood sugar management. But as with any nutrient, it is possible to overdo protein, and the use of protein powders can easily contribute to protein overload. Too much protein is linked with a higher risk of heart disease, cancer, kidney problems, and digestive issues. Also, protein contains calories, so overdoing protein means more calories, which could possibly contribute to weight gain. Bottom line, know the risks of using protein powders. They are not regulated by the FDA, so it is buyer beware when it comes to safety. Some people experience digestive distress, especially with milk-based powders. And always read the nutrition facts label, as protein powder can be high in calories and carbohydrates, which can impact your blood sugars. Finally, the Clean Label Project studied 132 protein powders for heavy metals, BPA, pesticides, and other contaminants. Some brands contain significant amounts of lead, cadmium, BPA, and arsenic. Food myth number 3. Celery juice is a miracle juice. Oh, if only this were true. Years ago, celery was touted as having negative calories. Now it's thought that celery juice has magical properties, eliminating illness and restoring health. And if you do not believe it, just visit Gwyneth Paltrow's website, which features an article written by Anthony William, originator of the celery juice movement, New York Times best-selling author and acclaimed medical medium, who uses his gift to read people's conditions and restore them to health. Celery is a vegetable that contains a decent amount of vitamins, mineral, and antioxidants. It's also very low in calories and carbohydrates, so it is a good choice for a snack. In terms of celery juice, a 16-ounce glass of celery juice, as recommended by Mr. William, contains 84 calories, 18 grams of carbs, 8 grams of fiber, and 430 milligrams of sodium. Bottom line, obviously, celery juice contains calories and some carbohydrate, mostly from fiber. But miraculous claims that celery juice fighting off autoimmune disorders, chronic fatigue syndrome, viruses, acne, and psoriasis, to name a few, are anecdotal and not backed by science. You are better off eating the actual celery stalk rather than juicing it, which concentrates the calories. And there's definitely something infinitely more satisfying when you crunch and chew your food versus drinking it. Myth number 4, drink kombucha to get your probiotics. Sure, protein is hot, but so are probiotics. If you are not familiar, there are good bacteria that live in your gut and help with digestion, keeping harmful bacteria at bay, and even promoting a healthy immune system. Certain factors and conditions can affect the balance of helpful microorganisms in your digestive tract, including taking antibiotics and an unhealthful diet. You can restore the balance of bacteria in your gut by including foods and beverages that contain probiotics or good bacteria, including yogurt, kefir, and fermented foods such as sauerkraut and pickles. Another probiotic source is kombucha, which is a fermented fizzy tea drink containing bacteria, fungi, and sugar that has surged in popularity due to its probiotic content. You will find it everywhere now, including your local grocery store. Of course, health claims abound when it comes to kombucha. Now, to be fair, kombucha does contain probiotics, and it also contains B vitamins and antioxidants. But read the nutrition facts label, and you will also see that, on average, an 8-ounce serving contains 30 calories, 7 grams of carbohydrate, and 2 grams of sugar. Granted, sodas, fruit juices, and sweetened iced tea contain far more. But continuously swig down kombucha, and those carbs will add up. Kombucha is purported to fight cancer and heart disease, promote liver health, help with weight loss, and even boost mental health. Of note, many of the studies supporting these claims were done in test tubes or rats, not in humans. And some of the claims are extrapolated from the overall possible benefits of probiotics, not specifically kombucha. If you are curious about this fizzy drink, it is important to know that besides its calories and carbs, it contains very small amounts of caffeine and alcohol, and due to its acidity, there's a chance that it could affect tooth enamel. Not everyone tolerates kombucha, and it may cause nausea, diarrhea, and headaches in some people. Perhaps more importantly, you should check with your doctor before drinking kombucha if you are pregnant or breastfeeding, or if you have a compromised immune system, as the bacteria in this drink could be harmful. And be very careful about making your own kombucha, as it may ferment for too long and can easily become contaminated if you are not extremely careful about keeping a sterile environment. Bottom line, kombucha is not a miracle potion. What it does have going for it is its probiotic content, which may very likely boost gut health. Keep in mind that you can get probiotics from other sources. And the fifth food myth is apple cider vinegar helps lower blood sugars. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a folk remedy to treat a host of different ailments. Made from fermented apple cider, the main component of apple cider vinegar is acetic acid. It also contains, in small amounts, B vitamins and polyphenols, a type of antioxidant. Apple cider vinegar may indeed be beneficial for people with diabetes. In a study published in the journal Diabetes Care in 2004, subjects with and without diabetes were given either apple cider vinegar or a placebo, an inactive treatment, and then fed a meal of a bagel, butter, and orange juice. Compared with the placebo, the vinegar improved insulin sensitivity, and glucose levels were improved in the subjects with insulin resistance. Perhaps not surprisingly, apple cider vinegar is claimed to help with weight loss. In a study of 175 people who consumed a drink of 0, 1, or 2 tablespoons of vinegar daily, those who had the most vinegar lost 2 to 4 pounds after 3 months, compared to those who had no vinegar, hardly a result to write home about. There's also some evidence that apple cider vinegar may improve blood fats. But more evidence is needed before routinely recommending apple cider vinegar for weight management. While there is nothing wrong with using apple cider vinegar in your diet, say, on a salad, it is not without its risks. The high acid content can damage tooth enamel, worsen or acid reflux, and, because it contains a fair amount of potassium, should be used with caution if you have kidney disease. Our next article is titled Type 2 Drug Victoza Being Studied as Alzheimer's Treatment by Quinn Phillips, published January 29, 2020, in Diabetes Self-Management Magazine Online. For years, there has been a hypothesis that Alzheimer's disease, an age-related neurodegenerative disorder that causes cognitive decline, is strongly related to glucose metabolism. In fact, some scientists have even gone so far as to speculate that Alzheimer's is akin to type 3 diabetes, with the brain losing neurons because it cannot adequately use glucose as fuel. It seems that one big player in the drug industry is now taking this hypothesis seriously. Novo Nordisk, which manufactures and markets insulin and other diabetes drugs, is involved in a clinical trial of its type 2 diabetes drug, Victoza, whose generic name is liraglutide, for people with Alzheimer's, as noted in an article in BioSpace. The drug has already shown promise for Alzheimer's in laboratory studies, so the current trial will involve actually evaluating its effectiveness in a larger group of people with the disease. As the article notes, the trial at Imperial College London in England will enroll 204 people with mild Alzheimer's dementia. Participants will be randomly assigned to take Victoza or a placebo, which is an inactive pill, for 12 months, and researchers will measure glucose metabolism in their brain along with various markers of cognition. Because smaller studies have shown that Alzheimer's symptoms can change when people stop taking Victoza, all participants will be offered a 12-month extension of the drug after the main part of the trial is over. This also means that people who take a placebo for the first year will have an opportunity to take the actual drug, with researchers assessing any changes in their symptoms. For more information on the new trial, visit its official page at Alzheimer's Society, United Kingdom. And next is an article titled Living Well, 7 Self-Care Strategies for Managing Diabetes This Winter, from the January-February 2020 issue of Diabetes Forecast magazine. Number 1, problem solving. Create a sick day kit and fill it with soup, sugar-free cough drops, tea, things that will make you feel better and are ready to grab when symptoms first surface. Add in necessary diabetes supplies, including a meter and ketone testing strips to remind you to monitor and manage your diabetes while you're on the mend. Another self-care strategy is being active. If you exercise outdoors in cold temperatures, dress in layers. Choose a sweat-wicking fabric for your base, fleece for your middle layer, and a lightweight waterproof material for the outer layer to shield you from wind and rain or snow. Another self-care strategy is taking medication. When your doctor prescribes a new medication, ask about side effects, warnings, how long you can expect to be taking it, and any other need-to-know facts about the drug. Another strategy, healthy eating. Ditch the refined grains, which are foods such as white bread and white rice, which have been stripped of fiber and many nutrients. Try whole grain bread, brown rice, and oatmeal, which are higher in fiber and can help manage blood glucose. Another self-care strategy is reducing risks. What is the single most important thing you can do to stay healthy this winter? Wash your hands and often. Scrub with soap and warm water for 20 seconds. Hum "Happy Birthday" twice, then rinse. And strategy number 6 is monitoring. Make sure your hands are warm before checking your blood glucose. Otherwise, you may struggle to get a large enough blood drop. Consider investing in a pair of fingerless gloves with a mitten flap cover to simplify glucose checks on the go. And the last living well self-care strategy is health coping. Short winter days can affect your mood and emotions. Schedule regular get-togethers around activities you enjoy, which might be a book club or game night, for instance, to keep your spirits up. This article was written by Jackie Nugent, author of the Clean and Simple Diabetes Cookbook, Flavorful, Fuss-Free Recipes for Everyday Meal Planning, by Kelly Rodriguez, Certified Diabetes Educator, Director of the Global Diabetes Program at Parkland Health and Hospital System in Dallas, by Donna Stevens, Certified Diabetes Educator, Nurse Practitioner at the University of Alabama at Birmingham Hospital. Our next article is titled, Meyer Ends Free Medication Program, by Joseph Gustaitis, published February 7, 2020, Diabetes Self-Management Magazine. Beginning in 2006, the drugstore chain Meyer Pharmacy began what they called their free prescription drug program. Under this program, the company filled prescriptions for 9 different medications at no cost to their customers. The drugs were certain antibiotics, certain prenatal vitamins, and of special interest to people with diabetes, atorvastatin and metformin. Atorvastatin is widely used by people with diabetes to help lower LDL, or bad cholesterol, in the blood, and metformin is used to improve blood sugar levels. The company has just announced that it will no longer be offering free prescriptions for metformin and atorvastatin. It will, however, continue to provide antibiotics and prenatal vitamins at no cost to customers. A doctor's prescription is necessary, of course, and prescriptions must be picked up at the store in person. In mid-2019, Meyer used a report stating that over the life of the program, Meyer had dispensed some 50 million free prescriptions at a cost of $650 million. At the time, company Vice President Jason Boich said, "This program allows us to provide families necessary medications that best manage their health. We believe you cannot put a price on wellness, so it is important for us to support local communities and do our part to help customers save on necessary medications and improve on their overall quality of life. Fortunately, metformin is not a terribly expensive drug. It normally costs about $15 a month, depending on the dosage, and some larger retailers offer discount coupons. Atorvastatin, which is available in a generic version, tends to cost more, but prices can vary depending on the store, so it is a good idea to shop around. And again, some retailers offer discounts and coupons. Finally, although this could change, some other retailers offer free prescriptions. Price Chopper, for example, which operates in the eastern United States, has no-cost metformin through its Diabetes Advantage program, and Publix Supermarkets, which is found in southern states, has also been offering free metformin prescriptions. Joseph Gustaitis, the author of this article, is a freelance writer and editor based in the Chicago area. Gustaitis has a degree in journalism from Columbia University. And now a word about Sun Sounds of Arizona. You can listen to this and most other Sun Sounds programs at your convenience with On Demand. Go to the website sunsounds.org and click Broadcast Info and Audio. Well, that is all the time we have for this edition of the Diabetes Newsletter. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Sue Madison. Join me next week for another edition of the Diabetes Newsletter. Thank you for tuning in and have a great week. Stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Goodbye for now.